The first three bands I signed were The Thermals, Hutch Harris, we were just talking about, Horse Feathers, and Tao with the Get Down, Stay Down. And those I was very happy with because all three of those albums that I put out that year sold over 20,000 copies. So that was like a pretty good start. And then literally a year later, the entire music industry tanked. So it's been a fascinating 10 years.
This is pdxpodcast.com. Thanks for tuning in. Boy, the struggle. That was Portia Sabin on the challenges ahead for her as the president of an independent record label here based in Portland. They're called Kill Rock Stars, and they have a very impressive roster, including artists such as the Decemberists, Summer Cannibals, and another guy you may have heard of him. His name is Elliot Smith. We're also going to speak with Bethany Moore. She's a representative for the NCIA, the National Cannabis Industry Association. My name is Gregory Day. You're listening to the weekly Portland podcast at pdxpodcast.com, also northwestpodcast.com. We have a new shorter URL. It's pdxpod.com. It's a general interest show. I interview folks from all around the Northwest, and I bring the best to you, my dear listeners. I bring along my field notes, my PG tips, and my biodynamic microphones. And I put those microphones in front of people's faces, and I hope for the best. Perhaps I'm over-exaggerating my appeal. Well, wouldn't be the first time. Back to Portia and the struggle.
I think the thing you can definitely say is that when I started in 2006, I could be pretty sure that any album I put out would sell about 2,000 copies. And if we were going to sell 2,000 copies, I had a benchmark for budgeting, right? So I would know how much I could spend because I would know how much it would take us to break even. As soon as everything changed, which was, you know, just months after that, I was no longer able to be assured that we would get, that we'd sell 2,000 copies. And so everything went from something that you could make a reasonable investment and be pretty sure of a return to you have no idea what kind of return you're going to make at all. And so that made investing really difficult. And so that sort of, that, I think that's the big thing that changed the game. Now, over the last few years, obviously the rise of Spotify and streaming has helped because we're definitely making a ton more money from streaming services than we, I mean, obviously when it didn't exist, but we are making money from those services in a new way. So it helps us, you know, be able to do budgeting in a different way. So it's not so much that you have to, that you can say, I know I'll sell 2,000 copies. It's more like a more of a long tail, just like they said it would be. You right. know, it's like, okay, great. Maybe we'll only sell 1,000 copies out of the box the first month of release, but we know we're going to sell thousands and thousands and thousands of streams as it goes along. So it's the income will grow over the life of the band. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we have to look at it now.
Right.
It's still frightening to know how you make an investment in that environment, but still. We try.
Portia then elaborated on what she looks for with artists looking to sign with Kill Rock Stars.
Things that I look for are, one, great music, great live show, and two, people who are going to do the work of being a band, which means usually I like to see that they've actually toured, because I have too many experiences with bands who go on their first tour
yeah.
and either break up on tour
yeah, yeah.
or just, it's common, right? Because it's touring is not for everyone. It is
yeah.
not for the faint of heart, and it's simply not for everyone. A lot of people really don't like it. They don't like being away from their girlfriend or boyfriend. They don't like the instability. You know, they can't get proper nutrition. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen on a tour that people are not down with. They don't like sleeping on floors.
Right. Vegan, they're in the middle of Oklahoma. That's kind
exactly.
of difficult.
Yeah, I remember when I went on tour with one of my bands, the Hissy Fits, my bass player had never been on tour before, and she and I were both total road warriors. Like, you could throw me in a van, I'll go anywhere, any day, like tomorrow, I would just leave.
Yeah.
And she was like that, except for coffee, because the farther we got into the South, she just was like, what is this stuff? where's the coffee? Wait, where's the coffee? She was like, every day. She just was like, this is not coffee. What are you doing to me? Well, the most recent band I signed, a band called Summer Cannibals from here in Portland, I actually met them through the podcast. They came in really early, maybe the second or third podcast that we ever did, so almost 2 years ago. And I was interviewing them because they run their own record label. And so I was talking to them, and they're like 24-year-old kids, and they'd already had this record label going for several years. They started a label to put out their friend's band. They'd done that one. They'd done their own record. They'd started going on tours. They'd found themselves great tours. They'd, you know, opened for some big bands. They had done all of this work. Plus, they really understood the business side because they ran their own label. And then when I heard their music, I was like, what? Whoa, this band is great. And then I saw them live, and I was like, oh my God, they've got everything. And I finally sent them an email. I was like, would you ever be on a different label, or do you just want to put it out yourself? You know, I was kind of tentative because I was like, they're doing great. They don't need me. And they were like, oh, yes, please. That would be wonderful. You know, we'd love to work with you. So I got lucky with that. But they had all the pieces, you know, and plus they had that component where I have never had a second's trouble with them because they know exactly what the job is because they were doing it by themselves. Plus they're grateful because it's my money on the line, not their money on the line, which is, you know, they can actually recognize that. I think a lot of bands, that's a problem that bands have with labels a lot of time, is they don't actually know what you're spending money on, so they can't be appreciative of it. Mm-hmm. They don't know that you just spent $5,000 on publicity for them, mm-hmm. so it just doesn't register. So that's the kind of thing I think nowadays you have to find bands largely through word of mouth, largely through other bands telling you, you know, you really got to check these people out. Or if you go see a band that you love, you know, check out who the openers are. You know, it's always been like that in the music industry. It's been largely word of mouth. So the other thing that you're saying about people can do music discovery differently now because of the internet, that is true. That is very true. However, when you look at how people are actually discovering music on the internet, it's largely, for example, on Spotify, yeah, through playlisting, which is great. But it's in other words, I feel like it, at every level, there's some kind of gatekeeping going on because for whatever reason, there's only a small percentage of people who are ever really willing to do the digging. And those are the people who ended up becoming people like me. You know, it's like I was the one who was standing in a Tower Records in 1982, like digging through a bin in the back somewhere, you know, and there's thousands of us, but there's not millions of us. And, you know, those people, the millions are the people who are like, what's good? Let's see what someone says. You know, let's see what someone tells me. They're not going to dig through.
What really surprised me about listening to your podcast was how pro Spotify you were. It was kind of unusual. I mean, I thought it was unusual for a label head to say something like that about a streaming service.
Well, Spotify's making us a lot of money. It's a double-edged sword because we wish the rates were higher, but when you have volume like we have, you can't deny it. I mean, you cannot deny millions of streams do result in actual cash. Yeah. And then if you're lucky enough, like me, to have inherited a fabulous catalog full of Elliott Smith and the Decemberists and, you know, these wonderful bands, it's like people are listening to that every day. Millions and millions and millions of streams. So that's a wonderful income stream for us. And on one of the podcasts, I recently talked to Ken Shipley from Numero Group, and he was just talking about this is the future. And if you're not invested in Spotify, you're going to be left behind, yeah, because it's where it's almost free money. You know what I mean? It's because it can go on forever in this way that one vinyl album can't. It's like one vinyl album is going to pay you more right off the bat, but that one vinyl album is it. You can't, but, you know, put it on Spotify and it can last forever.
Now, in addition to being the president of Kill Rock Stars, Portia also hosts an awesome weekly podcast called The Future of What. It's available at killrockstars.com and also on SoundCloud. In our final segment with Portia, she discusses the origins of the podcast and the label's focus on publishing comedy albums.
Okay, so the story of how this podcast started is really goofy. X-Ray FM here in Portland started a couple years ago, and I was an initial investor for the GoFundMe because, of course, everybody wants community radio in this town. Right. And about a year after that, I got an email from them saying, hey, you were one of our initial investors. Would you like to reinvest? And I wrote them back and I said, no, because I don't like your programming. However, I have an idea for a show. And I just thought, you know, they'll hit delete. And instead, I got a call from a person who was working over there as a producer. And he said, what's this idea? My goal in going in with this show, with this podcast, was that, much like we were talking about before, the music business has gotten a very bad reputation across the board. I would say, in particular, because of major labels. You know, people think labels just steal artists' money. They think we are ripping artists off. And so because of this sort of bad PR campaign that's always been around in the industry, I was thinking to myself, I've been in the industry 20 years, and everybody I know who works in the industry loves music and wants to help artists, and their whole goal is to help artists. And I was like, I know thousands of people in this industry who go to work every single day with the goal of helping artists. Why don't I just call those people and talk to those people, you know? And so that's sort of how this show was born, is let's discuss the topics that we all need to know about with the people who actually do this work on a daily basis. You know, 4 years ago or so, we started to do comedy albums, 4 or 5 years ago, and right. We were slightly ahead of the curve on that. I think a lot of people have sort of discovered that that's a good thing to do. We were just comedy fans in this office, but we didn't really know how to go about it because the previous models were either Comedy Central Records, you know, a record label that's literally just, you know, for their comedy TV show. Or, like, I looked at Sub Pop, and Sub Pop had done, you know, some Patton Oswalt and some... So these just really huge names. Yeah. So I didn't really know how to do that. I was like, should I call up someone really famous and say, do you want to do an album with us? You know, I just didn't really know how to get involved because those weren't the kind of comedians that we were going to see in the clubs anyway. And then when Kurt Brownell basically tweeted something at us, and then we tweeted back at him, and then an hour later I was on the phone with him saying, do you want to do a record with us? It sort of started there. And it's snowballed from there. And we've been really lucky with the people we've worked with. We've worked with wonderful, political, thoughtful people with something to say. And to me, that really harkens back to the original days of Kill Rock Stars with Bikini Kill and Bratmobile and Huggy Bear. And, you know, these bands that were political and had something to say and were angry about, you know, the state of the world. So I feel like there's a real synergy there between what we did back then and what we're doing now with comedy. Comedy also, in general, is incredibly cheap to make because all you have to pay for is one recording engineer and, you know, six mics or something. I mean, it's extremely compared to, you know, a band spending 2 weeks in a studio.
Right.
The costs are, like, negligible. And so it's been great because it recoups so fast. So the artists make money right away. We make money right away. It's been sort of a win-win, which is why I think other labels have been like, maybe we should do this as well. I feel like the podcast is one of my answers to trying to teach people the things that they need to know. Because a lot of times the artists that we work with, best case scenario, they get it and everything goes smoothly and they start to understand the business. But not every artist understands the business and not every artist wants to understand the business. And sometimes when you're on a label, that can be one of the big sources of tension between artists and their label. Or, you know, I mean, we have had so many scenarios where a band will call us and say, you know, what if we did this? And we have to say, well, we would spend X amount, you know, this many thousands of dollars, and it would get you, you know, like three more sales.
Yeah.
So we can't do that. But really all they hear is we can't do that. We're saying no. You know, so there's a lot of conflict there with potential conflict between labels and artists. We are lucky we work with some wonderful people who truly get it and who've really made the effort to educate themselves over time.
Yes.
And I feel like those are the people who actually have careers. You know, you must, to some extent, educate yourself about what your business is. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, it's your business. You're a small business owner when you're a musician. And no one else, you know, unless you're lucky enough to have gotten $1 million advance from a major and you have a business manager and a personal manager and a team... If you're a small artist, it's you, it's just like being a graphic designer, one person shop, or any business that you have that's just you. You're a sole proprietorship and you really need to know where your money's coming from. And so most people really do ultimately get that, but there are always those bands where it's a little trying.
Thank you, Portia. And now for a change of pace. We meet with Bethany Moore. She's a representative with the NCIA. I met with her at the Kennedy School last week, and we talked about the organization and how it affects us all here in Portland.
NCIA is an acronym, and it stands for National Cannabis Industry Association. We represent the legal, regulated, and legitimate cannabis industry nationwide, which means we're the guys with the lobbyists in Washington, D.C. that are fighting on behalf of the industry year-round. And we represent over 1,000 cannabis-related companies nationwide. There's so many great companies here in Portland that have sprung up since the laws have changed, both dispensaries and edible companies. All of these companies are dealing with both the issues at the state level as well as what the city of Portland is proposing. And I would love to see the social use campaigns that were mentioned earlier this evening come into play. And in fact, Denver, Colorado's working on something similar. For here in Portland, especially if you're looking at tourism, there may be people coming to Oregon because there's legal cannabis.
That is happening. That is definitely happening.
And Portland is extremely charming in and of itself. Without cannabis, there's so much to do and see and taste and drink, and now smoke and possibly eat if you like eating cannabis edibles. So just because we've passed laws to make it legal doesn't mean we're home free. There's still a lot of work to do. Well, there's a lot of regulations. There's a lot of restrictions. There's intense compliance issues that these companies have to deal with just to stay legal. And it's intense. Things like packaging. There's things like exit packaging. And we worry about how much waste our industry is producing just to keep up with these compliance regulations. And some of these, like the packaging, the exit packaging is in place because they don't want children to have access to the cannabis. So things get really complicated because regulators maybe are overthinking and maybe going a little bit too far.
They're overthinking it.
Well, at least they're thinking. Yay. Sorry, that was a horrible thing to say. But, you know, the cannabis industry is trying to be nimble and trying to be agile and trying to keep up on everything that they're asking of us so that we can show them we are responsible business owners. And you know what? That's one of the biggest differences I've seen in the last few years, going from being an activist to working for the National Cannabis Industry Association. And as I said, just because we've got legalization doesn't mean the work is done. In fact, we have to be ever more vigilant in making sure that these laws reflect our industry and the needs of the consumers. Bricklayers have been around for a long time. The beer industry has been around for a long time. Accountants, every other industry, they all have industry associations, trade associations, representing your needs at the federal level. So that's why NCIA exists and will continue to exist. And even when all 50 states are legal, there's going to be other battles to fight. Boring ones, like lowering your taxes, but every industry has a trade association, no matter what industry. So that's why we're here, and 7 years in, we're growing and so proud to be representing the industry. The website where you can find out more information about NCIA is www.thecannabisindustry.org. And our weekly podcast that just launched in November right after the election is called NCIA's Cannabis Industry Voice. And it's hosted on cannabisradio.com. I mean, you're going to hear from business owners about how they have lost 36 bank accounts over the course of 2 years.
You're kidding me. This is happening?
That has happened. I have one member from Colorado who went
36 bank accounts.
Yep. 36 bank accounts.
It's insane.
It's completely insane.
Because they don't recognize the legitimacy of the business?
Well, banks have to answer to sort of a more federal, national voice, and if the regional or national directors feel that the risk is too high to take to offer lending services to cannabis businesses, they'll deny them. Now, some folks have bank accounts because they have good relationships with their banks through their history, through other businesses they've ran perhaps. But banks have to file what's called a SARS, a suspicious activity report, whenever you're dealing with cannabis. So that's an extra cost for that bank to have to file that report. And banks are deciding whether they actually want to deal with it or not, and whether the risk of offering banking services to cannabis businesses is worth it or not. And
even for a highly regulated legal product, there's still all these hoops to jump through, and that's why the NCIA exists, the voice of the cannabis industry.
There it is. I couldn't say it better myself. Actually, that doesn't make any sense because I said it. My name is Gregory Day. You've been listening to the weekly Portland podcast at pdxpodcast.com. Also, pdxpod.com. Also, northwestpodcast.com. That's it. That's all I got. See you next week.